All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you for joining us here today. It is Thor's Day, the 17th of April, 2025. Hope you're all doing well out there. Thank you for tuning in. Kind of a last-minute live stream. I knew I wanted to do it, but it was kind of busy this morning, so hopefully you guys are out there tuning in. Otherwise, of course, you can watch us in the archives as usual on redice.tv, redicemembers.com, Odyssey, Rumble, BitChute. Where else do we go up? Telegram, you can watch us there. Number of places. Anyway, it's good to be good to be back with you guys. Hope you're all doing well out there. We are going to address the issue of native European spiritual traditions today, and I'm going to bring on a guest, which I heard in some spaces. I was very impressed by his historical knowledge and kind of putting this in context for us. Again, personally, of course, I grew up more or less in a with pagan traditions without really knowing it, kind of discovering this later as you pieced, pieces together of what Yule or Christmas was and Midsummer, Easter celebrations and things like this. So this is not a strange topic to me, but to some of you, it's not something we cover all the time, although we've covered plenty in the past as well. But I want to, you know, kind of churn this out a little bit and try to figure out is there an ideal religion for us moving forward? I mean, again, personally, I'm very lenient. I don't at the end of the day, if you're pro-white, I'm all right with you. Some say I'm not lenient enough. Some say I'm too lenient. You can never really win that debate. Ultimately, I think its most important thing is that we form tribes, organized, and fight back against, you know, the ongoing white genocide, essentially. That's where I stand on the issue. However, this is close to me personally, so I'm very interested in talking about this. And so our guest here, Assyric Media, welcome. Good to talk to you. How are you?
Doing pretty well. How about you, Henrik?
Very, very good. Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here. Great to bring you on. As I said, I've listened to some spaces. I was very impressed with your historical knowledge on a lot of these things and kind of how we ended up where we are. Really? So I kind of want to, you know, talk more about that here today, obviously. But I want to ask you about your background first a little bit. Did you grow up, a Christian, more knowledgeable about paganism, atheism? What's your background like on the religious front?
So I grew up Roman Catholic and, you know, grew up in a very devout family, large family. And, you know, so much so to the point where, you know, my father and my grandfather would play reruns of Life is Worth Living by Bishop Fulton J. Sheen, you know, so it was kind of a big deal. And, you know, around the time that I was in high school, that's when the big scandal with the Catholic Church came out. And, you know, I couldn't honestly, I couldn't honestly be a part of or support an organization that does those types of behaviors. And so I became non-religious for a time. And then at the behest of my father, he said, you know, gave me a request. He said, give Christianity one more shot. And I said, sure, you know, I'll give it an honest shot. And I looked into the roots of Christianity and became Orthodox. So I was, going to Orthodox church. I was taking the classes, and I was, you know, baptized, took my first communion in the mid-2010s. And then that's when, you know, things started to happen. We could talk more about that if you want. But eventually I found myself saying that this is not of our folk. This does not connect with our blood. It is a foreign faith of a foreign god of a foreign people. And so you have to ask the question, you know, what is the religion of our people before Christianity came in? And once when you cross that barrier, there's no going back.
Now, would you say you were pro-white at that point when you started questioning these things? Did that develop while you were a Christian, or did that come later?
That came later, and specifically while I was Orthodox.
How long would you say you were kind of exploring Orthodoxy?
I would say, I haven't thought about it, but around 5 years.
5 years, okay. So it was really kind of you studying it, that kind of I've heard from some people like that. They study themselves out of it. That's what I've heard. You know, it's like a handful of people I know like that. And they become, you know, kind of more interested. Well, so tell us what attracted you to, I mean, again, paganism is a very broad term, obviously, you know, title of the show today, Native European Spiritual Traditions, very broad, very, you know, many denominations or whatnot. For me, it was easy because, you know, I'm Swedish, grew up in Sweden. So kind of makes sense to be, you know, attracted to, you know, Vikingry, Norse history, Germanic traditions, and things like this, obviously. But how was that for you? Did you explore around? Did you look at like different European pre-Christian traditions, or what was that journey like for you?
Well, you know, I have a 4-step program, so you know, and I'll just briefly go over it, which is if you look into like what these faiths were, and there are multiple, right? When you look into what these faiths are, it becomes abundantly clear right away that these are ethnic faiths. And because these are ethnic faiths, you have to follow your ethnic, you know, faith, your ancestral faith, right? You are part of an ethnos. And so when you look into your lineage, your ancestry, you start to ask the question, okay, what were these people? What did they believe? And then step number two is to read the legends with these people, right? The first two books that I started with was Germania by Publius Cornelius Tacitus and the Havamal, the words of Odin himself. And that's how I got started. And then you go into the Poetic Edda and these other things. So, you know, when you read these legends, you find that they connect with you on a much deeper level than just intrigue. And then step number three is to do paganism, right? So many people are, you know, they wait for that step. But, you know, one of the things that I like to say is that emulation is the highest form of veneration, right? When a son comes of age, I'm sure that you know this, when a son comes of age, he plays with his father's tools. And it's because he loves them. He wants to be like them. Same thing with a daughter and the mother. You know, they want to help. They're interested. They're curious. And they want to do what the mother does. And if that's true between, you know, children and parents, how much more true is that between you and your ancestors, between you and your gods?
Yeah.
Right. And step number four is, you know, again, a hard one, but, you know, it's hard in theory, but it's not hard in practice. You have to find other people, right, and worship together. Because, yes, you can do these ancient practices and beliefs at home, but it wasn't a at-home faith. You know, we had communal ritual, we had communal sacrifice, communal feasting, right? Coming together for Midsummer, for Yule, right? And, you know, on all these other holy days. And so, you know, being a part of a religious community, coming together to worship, you know, that brings it all together.
Yeah, what made it, you know, kind of, again, a no-brainer for me as I started getting, you know, becoming more aware of what's happening to our people, how we're being targeted and these things was, you know, again, and that came in conjunction with me exploring my own history, the traditions of Scandinavia, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Germany overall, was kind of this automatic attraction. It's like, oh, it's folk-based, right? It's already there, like it's kind of prepackaged. And so that felt to me like, okay, that makes sense, you know, kind of thing. That makes it not universalist. It is not something anybody can adopt. They could try, of course, but it will not truly really kind of be theirs, you know what I mean? Which, of course, is so for me, that like breaking out of Christianity or trying to understand, you know, was not just an... I've understood it. I've read plenty about it, so it's not that I'm miss or uninformed about it, but the attraction for it wasn't there. So I would assume that's much you know, harder, obviously difficult to question. Now, that's part of your how you grew up or whatnot. Was that like when you started kind of disconnecting from that and you hadn't found your way? Did you feel, I'm not sure this is right the term, but like lost or empty, or like you, did you need something to replace it with, I guess? That's my question.
Did I need to replace a spiritual system?
Yeah, when you're like, you're like looking into Christianity, you're beginning to like, okay, that's not it. I'm orthodoxy, and then finally come here. But like when you walked away from that, did you feel like that you're like, oh, I got to find something because I feel not spiritually satisfied? Does that make sense?
It wasn't spiritual satisfaction. It was coming to the realization that, you know, there's spirituality all over the place. And, and going into deep dives into these things over the years, I've come to understand that spirituality is intrinsic to all life. One of the coolest things that I found was that you have chimpanzees. Okay, because just to back up for a second, you know, there's the accusation that, you know, religion's man-made, that, you know, they saw thunder and said, oh, there must be a god up there somewhere, right? And it's just a man-made thing, right? That's kind of the, you know, academic point of view. But let's look at the evidence. Let's look at, you know, other creatures. You start to notice things. Like, for example, birds will have funerary rituals. You start to notice things like elephants who will bury their dead, and sometimes bury their dead with tools, right? With sticks, with leaves, with pretty flowers, food. And they don't just bury their own dead. They also bury like lions and humans. This is documented. This is real, testable, repeatable, observable. And they even do rituals, right? Elephants. There's this group of elephants that they're called the cave elephants. And what they do is they line up outside of this cave, and they happen so regularly that you can buy tickets to watch it happen in person. They will cover themselves in dirt. They will walk single file to the back of this cave and communally feast on a giant salt rock. Then they'll come out and take a ritual bath. Now, if it was just about eating the salt, why all those other rituals? This is a little weird. Then you start to notice things like Pliny the Elder and other people writing that elephants have been observed worshiping the moon and the sun. This is a fact. This is real. Okay. And then you look at chimpanzees, right? And they're building shrines. We've got it on video. We've got pictures. There are studies done on this where they will go to hollowed out tree trunks and they will hand select stones of specific sizes, shapes, and colors and put them inside of these hollowed out tree trunks and make shrines. So this idea that, you know, faith is man-made is just not true. That spirituality is intrinsic to all life, and we utilize it to our benefit or we deny it to our detriment. And you start to notice things like when I was in university, and this was a while ago, this isn't today. I can only imagine what it's like today. But, you know, back then you could see where lack of faith or no faith takes people. Now, some right. people don't have faith and they are right as rain, and, you know, power to them. But even they can't deny that the vast majority of people who lack that faith, lack that drive, lack that purpose and that connection, turn out for the worse. And so, you know, really it's about getting ourselves right so that we can move forward, do what we need to do. And not just survive, but to thrive.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, because I mean, with those traditions, what I like about it is, obviously, there is a man-made component later, right? To religions, albeit they're all founded on ancient, you know, more older spiritual traditions. Obviously, you have. And I don't want to do a whole syncretism thing here, but it's true, right? It's undeniable that, like,
that's a whole debate.
I know. Many people don't like that, but no, I'm saying, like, let's go back to the ancient world, right? Bronze Age, pre-Bronze Age, right? You have stories out of, you know, Babylon, let's say the Epic of Gilgamesh or whatever. And obviously, when they wrote the Old Testament, they borrowed, you know, plenty from those traditions. There are certain aspects of Zoroastrianism. It doesn't mean it's all the same, but I'm saying they borrowed from each other, right? But the older systems, and again, I can speak more here to maybe the overall Native European spiritual traditions, but no one can exactly say when we arose, right? When man is considered to be man, we get a better idea. There's more studies all the time, obviously, but still, it's a big, you know, it's a question mark. We don't even know about our collective memory, how we pass down information and these kinds of things, right? It's almost like I see it as a fog, right? The further back you go, the more foggy it gets, and we don't know. We just don't have answers, right? But what I see is out of that fog, as we developed, we already had, as you said, kind of a natural spiritual system with us. It wasn't, therefore, based on like men sitting down and saying, let's do this and this and that and pull this together and pull, you know what I mean? It was much more organic and natural, and it developed with us as we developed. And it just seems like a very... It seems like a purer form of a spiritual tradition, as opposed to like all these councils and they're sitting down and no, let's exclude that. Let's not do that. I get organization or whatnot. You have it for that, right? But it's undeniable that religions have been, control mechanisms, obviously, of large populations, right? If you don't believe this, you'll go to hell, you know, kind of very basic things like that. But like playing on early human superstition of not understanding kind of the natural world, right? Would you agree with that?
No, I would disagree in a little bit. But one thing that I would like to add, as far as like how far back this goes, right? Because this isn't like something that just occurred during the Bronze Age.
No, I know that. I'm just saying in terms of how we passed on that information. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. Like how far back we can try to find out. For us, it's a fog, not for them.
Right, and of course. You know, we're still making discoveries every day. And, you know, this is part of the joy of revival because, you know, we get to figure out more, you know, as we go along. But here's the thing is that, you know, we can take the ancestral faith as is and start reviving it today, right? Because some people get, they put a block and say, until we know every single little thing, we can't move forward. And that's one of the objections to pagan revival that you see from our opponents, as it were, that, you know, you can't do this because, oh, you don't know exactly how much mead to give in libation. You don't know how much incense to burn. And stuff like that. We don't need to have those specifics in order to revive these faiths. Now, as far as like transmission over time, these are debates that are ongoing, and I'm enjoying it personally because the more that we debate, the more that we discover, the more clear that fog becomes. Because as you know, fog, especially in the north, right near a lake, say, you know. Fog comes off of the lake at night and it becomes very difficult to see. And even in the early morning, it's still really difficult. But as the sun rises, as the new dawn comes up, the sun will clear the fog, right? And this is what we're seeing is as we move forward in time, we're starting to see that fog dissipate. We're starting to see further than we did before. And so I'm not necessarily worried about knowing every single detail, we do know enough to continue forward and be true to the gods and be true to the ancestors. And in fact, it's not just about the past, right? But it's about people who are communicating and interacting with our gods today. I recently did a documentary. I don't know if you've watched the whole thing. It's about 30 minutes long, where I talk with people all over the world, from Eastern Europe to Britain, Canada, the U.S., Australia even, and did an interview, you know, talking to people about their religious experiences, about coming home to ancestral faith. And, you know, the gods answer the call to people who call upon them. So it's not just about the past and what we did in the past and stuff like that, but it's also about our gods interacting with us here and now. And that's one of those things that I need to sometimes reiterate, that the gods are very much active and they are guiding us home.
Yeah, the aspect there of knowing exactly what details and stuff like that. Yeah, I've heard that too, and it matters, and it matters greatly. And the more we can find out, the better it is, right? But at the same time, it goes back to what you said about emulating. You know, again, the play on this is LARPing, right? But I love this tweet, right? We must emulate great men. You must LARP, and LARP is, of course, a negative connotation. Not in this tweet, but generally, that's a negative connotation, right? But we must LARP as them. Julius Caesar LARPed as Alexander the Great, who LARPed as Achilles. Repeat after me. I'm Hercules. I'm Achilles. I'm Diomedes. Yeah. I'm Odysseus. I'm Perseus. I'm Leonidas, etc. Right? So this is a you do what you can. You piece together what you can. And I'm not too picky about the details. I mean, I want to get it right, so don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it sounds gay also, I guess, but it's the thought that counts. It's the engagement that counts. It's the sincerity that it counts. And as you do that, as you connect more with it, I think if you're spiritually connected to it, you find a strand of authenticity in it. Does that make sense? That's how I feel about it anyway.
It does. And you know, that tweet that you just pulled up, you know, that's 100% correct. If you look at the history of real life pagans in the past, they emulated their ancestors through ancestral practices, right? And the ancestor cult. But you also had them emulating heroes and great figures that came before them. And emulation is the highest form of veneration, right? What other form of veneration could you name off the top of your head that is better or more profound or more heartfelt than wanting to be like somebody else? There's none.
Yeah, that's right. Now, we weaved into this, and we'll get to some other topics in a little bit in terms of, like, you know, how that changed, what happened in Europe at the time. We have the rise of ascendancy of Christianity and things like this, obviously, but even the origin question, right, of you know, where we come from. There's a lot of studies on this continuously, right? Are we predominantly Yamnaya? Are we Western hunter-gatherers, Eastern hunter-gatherers? When did the pastorals, you know, all these questions, right? And it reminded me of a study a while back, and this would be interesting if it is true, right? And it was kind of, yeah, it was based on the thing, like, we could be totally wrong about the origins of humans. I don't believe at all in out-of-Africa theory, but one of the University of Copenhagen in Denmark did this study. They found one skeleton, right? Scandinavians are the earliest Europeans. Scientists have sequenced a 37,000-year-old genome. The results show that present-day Scandinavians are the closest living relatives to the first people in Europe. Let me play that clip. It could be interesting for you to hear if you haven't heard that before. And again, and that to get to the kind of point of, like, how old not only we are, but, like, of what the traditions or our belief system might be. Listen to this here.
My name is Eske Willerslev. I'm the director for the Center for Geogenetics, and we are releasing a paper in Science concerning how the genetic diversity in present-day Europeans came about. We have sequenced the genome of a 37,000-year-old individual from Europe, meaning it's one of the oldest modern humans found in Europe. And this genome basically reveals three different things. First of all, and this is very surprising, we can see that all the major genetic components present in living-day Europeans were already present in Europeans 37,000 years ago. And that changes the whole concept of how Europe was populated, where we previously thought, well, it was massive movements of people from outside into Europe providing genes. Now the data suggests, no, there was like this metapopulation of people stretching all the way from Europe to Central Asia, exchanging genes in a very complex network with each other, and it's not this massive movement of people all the time going back and forth. The other thing we can see is that this individual is 100% European. There's no East Asian genetically speaking in this individual, and this means it provides a minimum date for the split time between the lineage leading to Japanese, Chinese, East Asian people and to the lineage leading to Europeans. So that is minimum 37,000 years old.
All right, I found that very, very interesting because we always tackle that. Well, we're all mutts. You see these out of science papers all the time, right? Well, you mixed with these different people anyway, or this group or whatever. And I guess it touches a little bit on this aspect that like we have to. So many people want to trace back their ancestry to basically like the Middle East, right? As well, and like obviously you have the Jews are not the real Jews, and we're the Israelites. And again, to me, that has never, I've never had to cross that bridge or try to, join those strands or anything like that, because it's like, all right, well, it's right there in Europe, and we had our traditions, and that's what it was, and that's fine for me. Again, if someone wants to, go off and do a different thing, I'm not going to be too picky about it, as long as it's not detrimental to us and our people, obviously. But if they're pro-white, that's fine. But our roots go way back. I mean, there's just no doubt about it, and we might very well have carried those spiritual traditions along with it for a very long time. What do you think of stuff like this?
Absolutely. So I'm going to start around the time period that Professor Ashkavitislev laid out, and it's a culture called the Aurignacian, and this is a fascinating culture. It was the first pan-European culture ever, right? 40,000 years old, right? And that's difficult to put into perspective. The building of the pyramids was 5,000 years old, right? And everybody knows the meme that Cleopatra lived closer to us today than the building of the pyramids. The building of the pyramids, 5,000 years old, multiply that time by 8, right? It's such a long time that we can't even fathom, but we do know a couple of things about these people. And they were polytheistic pagans. How do we know this? There was a cave in southern Germany where they went in and they looked around and they found statues of different gods and goddesses. But there was one in particular that stood out. It was a massive one, and massive is relative in this time, right? And it was carved out of a mammoth tusk. They estimate it to be, it took 400 man hours to carve with a flint knife. And it was a body of a man with the head of a lion. It was no doubt a god. It wasn't like, for example, everybody's seen, the Ice Age Venus statues, right? It wasn't humanoid. This was no doubt a god. And so therefore, right, we can say that Europe as a continent and the people in it, which we are, I don't subscribe to the hypothesis that we are secret Asians that moved in and killed all the original Europeans. That's not even true. As, these papers, from Ashkavitislev as well as others, the Ice Age mummy Atsi, found in the Alps as an example, that these are our people and they were polytheistic. Not only this, but at the same time, and I have to point this out because she's a badass archaeologist lady. Her name is Dr. Genevieve von Pitzinger, and she went through all of these caves from the Iberian Peninsula into Italy, into where modern Greece and, the former Yugoslavian countries, all the way into the Ukrainian steppe. And what she found was a written language, a proto-written language that was 40,000 years old and in use for 30,000 years. If you get a chance, look up the 32 Ice Age symbols.
Interesting.
How many people were taught in school that writing came about in Ice Age Europe? Nobody. How many people were taught in school about the very, very ancient traditions of Ice Age Europe? Nobody. But they're extremely important to our history, and it shows that, what we colloquially call the umbrella term paganism has been so ancient. It's so ancient that it's ingrained in our blood and ingrained in who we are.
I assume this is the – do you see the article that I'm showing? This is the one, I assume?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And you can see parallels with that and then how they evolve over time. Language is a fascinating study because you can, track back a lot of, connections with it or whatnot. Then you get like, Göbekli Tepe and these things. That's way later than that. That's like, what, 12,000 years old, something like that? So that's like half, you know, go. That's like half of that period. You know, moved
a
back.
A quarter.
Even. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting, right? What do you think of the Yamnaya thing overall? Is there validity to that? Obviously, mass migration, but migrations, right? That's what, 6,000 years ago, give or take, you know, a few hundred years in there. These are not exact. There seems to have been incursions, but the question is how similar they were already to us as they came in, right? We're talking about the same root population at the end of it. That's what I think, anyway.
Yes, and that's true because, like I said, if you track the Aurignacian culture, which is 40,000 years old, you see that they extend into the steppe, right? So these are Ice Age Europeans that did extend out into the steppe and then came back, right? So they weren't from Asia and then moved into Europe as academics claim, and there's a reason why they promote this. They promote this in academia by the likes of David Reich, as well,
yes,
as others,
yeah,
to disassociate modern Europeans from the continent of Europe as a homeland,
yep,
to the point where, and this is their propaganda, this is the whole point of their messaging, you are not from Europe, therefore you can't claim Europe as a homeland. But we know that that's not true. So you got to watch out for these types of propaganda techniques, and you have to, where you start the clock is important. I start the clock at 40,000 years ago, whereas some people start the clock 5,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. Where you start the clock is important because you ignore much needed prior context to understand, you know, the current situation.
Yeah, David Wright. I remember that too. It was like, it's an admixture, right? And then, of course, you look into his background and what his objective is, and it's like, look at that, you know? Usual suspects, yep, at it again. So exactly. So we have a...
His father was, I think if I read correctly, the first director of the Holocaust Museum in D.C.
Oh, really?
So we know where this is coming from. This is anti-white propaganda. You know, and utilizing propaganda techniques and obscurantism, you know, hiding historical context,
yeah,
or
Walter,
omitting it,
Walter
in
Reich,
order to push a narrative.
There it is. Walter Reich, a professor at George Washington University, sort of the first director of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. There you go. Yep. All right. So yeah, they use these tricks to undermine us and to make us believe, we're already mixed out. What does it matter? It's already, right? So I feel, you know, with the ascendancy of all these new technologies and stuff and where this is going, that we need a return. I think technology has advantages here and there. Obviously, I won't do, you know, us being intuitive and developing things, inventing things, obviously, these are good traits, right? However, I feel there's a difference now in terms of like how it's beginning to alter humans and what we are and what they're potentially capable of doing. And I'm talking about AI, bioengineering, genetics, these types of things, obviously transhumanism, things like that. And the further this goes, I think overall that people who enter onto that path is soon enough. It might take hundreds of years. It could take longer or maybe shorter. But they're on an evolutionary dead end, right? If you begin to meddle too much with this, and I just feel this urge and need, mm-hmm, and drive to return, right? We think that technology and progress is always salvation. It will always make things better or whatever. But ultimately, has it? You know, where are we going? I think for spiritual, physical, and mental health overall, we need to return back to nature, to be more in our ideal state. It doesn't mean we can't have, you know, advancements or tools at our capabilities, but it also means we need to firmly understand where we come from and what our roots are and where we feel the best as humans, right?
Absolutely. So, like, you know, people make the assumption that if you return to ancestral faith, that means you have to be a grug. And that's just not true. If you look at the technological developments in the pagan past, they are massive. In fact, technological development is a pagan tradition going all the way back. And I actually have a unique little hypothesis as to how that is, but that may take too much time. But as far as, you know, pagan technologies that people might find curious and look into, the Anacatharian mechanism, which was found off the coast of the Greek island of Anacatheria, was a proto-analog computer for navigation. You would enter a date, and it would tell you exactly where the planets would be, right, to a very precise degree. And they're made out of gears that look very modern, in fact, very industrial. And they have Greek letters. They have the Greek gods in there, so we know it's not Christian, and so on. And this is essentially, you know, just the tip of the iceberg as far as, and by the way, if you look into automata, right, Roman writers, Greek writers wrote about this. In fact, it's even in the Greek legends, right? Jason and the Argonauts and Talos, right? Talos was an automata, a robot that, for lack of a better term, that guarded Crete, right? And so on. So this idea that paganism is anti-technology is just not true. In fact, what we see is a technological regression. To kind of put this into perspective, the ancient Egyptians, they invented the toothbrush. They were they have the earliest toothbrush that we're aware of, right? And we all take that for granted, but we understand how important dental hygiene is. And during Christianization, everybody lost that, and everybody's teeth turned to shit until relatively recently. And when I say relatively recently, I'm talking about the late Victorian and after Victorian era. People started saying, okay, we got to take better care of our teeth. When you look at things like, for example, air conditioning, you know, we say, okay, this was invented by Carrier in the early 1900s, but come to find out that the ancient Persian pagans built air conditioning systems, you know, they're called actuals, and they use cooling towers and earthworks in order to keep ice throughout the entire year and stuff like that. And it was air conditioning, you know, and stuff like that. So you look at these technologies and you ask yourself the question, right? Indoor plumbing in Rome and Greece and elsewhere. And you say, you know, maybe what we quote unquote know about the pagan past and technology is just not true. And I'm not talking about like conspiracy theories about like having UFOs and starships and stuff like that. Oh. I'm talking about real archaeology, right? Yeah. What we know as a fact through physical evidence.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when it comes to transhumanism, right? So let's take what we know from the past and move it into the present and the future, right? Transhumanism. This is the idea that we need to transcend our biological body and fuse it or submit to a digital existence. And, you know, this is 100% a dead end.
Yes.
And I'll give you two examples, really easy peasy, right? Now, we could talk about the vax. Let's talk about something that happened a little bit before that, asbestos, right? In the mid-1900s, you were a dummy. You were backward if you didn't put asbestos in your home. It's a rock, it's a hairy rock. You could make concrete paste out of it and insulate your home. They used to wrap it around pipes so that they wouldn't overheat. They would put it in the walls. They would put it on the floor. They would put it on the outside. And, you know, it was the wonder thing. In fact, you would be negligent. You would be putting your family in danger if you did not utilize this technology. Now we know that it was poisonous, right? And similar thing with the transhumanists today, where they want to trade, I kid you not, this is real. They want to trade a biological body, which if you take care of it, can last about 100 years. And they want to trade it for a mechanical body in the form of a computer, because it's not just software, because software needs to be stored on hardware. Those hardwares last, if run continuously, right, they last like 5-10 years without repair or maintenance. So you are trading a 100-year body for a 10-year body. And by the way, when you are in that digital system, do you not think that the powers that be would say, hey, if you don't work and mine Bitcoin, say, for, you know, 20, 30 years, then we're going to cut your life subscription. People like, you know, with the Neuralink, you just put an off switch in your brain. You did.
Yeah.
You put an off switch in your brain where if you violate the terms and conditions, they'll just turn you off. You know, well done. You played yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be terms of services. You know, you'll own nothing, including your body, and you'll be miserable. I mean, look at the Musk said this recently here. Said, as I mentioned several years ago, it increasingly appears that humanity is a biological bootloader for digital superintelligence. And he's like, no. This is, look, again, technology, fine, you know, but like there is that line in the sand, right, of when we begin to alter who we are. And the other thing with AI that people don't think, oh, yeah, but we can use it and stuff. And it's like, sure, yeah, okay, that's fine. But just look at how many of these AI startups and stuff are now based basically out of Tel Aviv in Israel. I just did a segment on this, but you have to show you a couple of headlines here, right? Israel is a tech superpower, and America needs it on its side. This is whole thing here about how they're using American ingenuity, actually, and just like making it later intellectual property in Israel, but that's a different topic. How the occupation in Israel fuels Tel Aviv's booming AI sector. The thriving AI landscape in Israel and what it means for global AI competition. Here's a couple more. Israel aims to be an AI superpower, advanced autonomous warfare. And here's like a graph of some of the startups here, like of like just Israeli AI startups that's funded by the Israeli government. This is, of course, subsidized largely by, you know, America and Germany at this point because of all the money that's flowing in. And they have this whole system. And so people need to understand like that. They are seeking to position themselves where they are 100% control of this new digital reality that they're basically building right now. And it's going to be a prison system. It's going to be a level of enslavement that we don't even have. We haven't even seen that type of enslavement before. And as you said, it's all about, let's assume they roll out UBI because now all the robots are replacing you at work, right? What are we going to do? It's all these people, the gay Jewish World Economic Forum guy there, Harari. Like, what do we need all the humans for? Even Bill Gates was out the other day here about a week ago. Yeah, basically, we don't, you know, what do we, we're all replaceable, apparently. This is the next step to the replacement, right? It's like you thought it was bad enough with like open borders and immigration and brown people coming into our countries. Well, now they're wheeling out these things, even easier for them to control. So this is clearly, to me, a path that is super dangerous, right, if we begin to adopt this. And you can kind of see it too, right, as you said. Well, if you do want to get the, if there is a job, after all, that you can find or whatever, or certain services within society that's necessary, well, are you going to recall out of memory information that we know you're going to be connected to the global brain, okay, the cloud or whatever, and we're going to have to put this chip in you, or I mean, I think the technology is already more advanced than that. No one's going to drill a hole in their skull. Well, maybe a few lunatics will, but they'll just read your synaptic brainwaves from a distance. Mm-hmm. They basically have that technology now, right? So the point is, that's a prison system. And so as that is expanding, I'm kind of torn in terms of like, partially we need to kind of be within it and at least up to a certain point kind of compete with. There is a risk that we will basically turn into like Amish, right, or whatever, and you know, in that, not directly, but like if we refuse certain set of technologies, we'll be set back so much that like we become even more vulnerable. But then at the same time, as I said, if we do adopt some of it and agree to it and accept it and bring it into us, we integrate with it, we will no longer be who we are, and we will de facto be, you know, controllable by outside forces. So is this stuff you think about? Because yeah, I did a segment on it recently. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just like, let's just return to the land and go back to nature and like just let them play this shit out, because I think they're on a dead end. What do you think?
Well, a great show on this about technology and pagan revival on Telegram's Pagan Revivalism channel. And great show to listen to. You can download it and listen to it. It's about hour 30 minutes. And, you know, essentially covers these same topics, right? Because, you know, here's kind of the deal is that, you know, let's look at nutrition, right? Because according to the science guys, right, modern food is calorically dense, full of nutrients and all of this other stuff, but it makes you fat, it makes you lazy, and it messes with your mind. and your gut bacteria and all of this other stuff. Not only this, but we've lost connection with the land itself, right? To the point where most people don't know how to grow their food. Most people have never raised livestock or don't know where to start or how to begin. And they don't know how to process or clean an animal. A lot of people don't hunt now. I mean, some do, you know, but let's face it, most people live in the urban areas, and those urban areas, they don't know how to process a deer. Even if they shot one, they wouldn't know what to do with it after, and they'd probably spoil the meat by cutting the intestines wrong, you know, and so on. So, like, you know, and by the way, these skills are not just in cases of emergency, but these are skills that can benefit you in the meanwhile, you know, in the present. For example, if you grew your own fruits and veg, you had bees, you know, for honey and for pollination, and you had livestock, you know, not only would you cut on waste, but you would also, you know, be friendly to the land and save money. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, have you ever had chickens? They lay eggs all the time, you know, so like, you know, that's more money that can go to you and building a family, building a community, building a temple, and these other things. So, you know, there needs to be a balance. And for the people who say that we need to run away from self-sufficiency and doing these old techniques, what they're doing is they're putting themselves into a very bad position if things go wrong. How many people were completely, you know, with the LA fires that just happened a couple months ago? How, you know, and I haven't looked into the situation today, but how many people are really, really suffering because they don't know what to do, you know? And having those ancient survival techniques and, you know, growing your own food and saving your own food without electricity, like, let's ask ourselves the question and let's be honest about it. If the lights turned off tomorrow, right? If the lights turned off tomorrow and they didn't come back on, how long would you last? And for the vast majority of people, that's almost zero because they don't have that, they don't have those, that ancestral wisdom. So, you know, what we need is a balance. By the way, I'm not against people who want to do pagan Amish. Power to you. Okay. But, you know, here's the thing. If we go back to the Iron Age or the Bronze Age technologically, we're going to be conquered in 3 seconds. That's not a joke.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a balance realistically.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a double-edged sword. It's a hard, you know, balancing act essentially. Cause like, what do you draw? We'll see where this goes. But I mean, in the next, I don't know, if they get their way here, 10, 20 years or so, things are going to be vastly different. I mean, they're rolling a lot of this out, you know, kind of right now, and they want to really trap you kind of in that digital environment, essentially. And just think of just being lost, right, in like AI-generated worlds and the escapism that will come, you know, with those kinds of things, right? The addictiveness of, you know, virtual reality, and maybe the interfaces will improve later on or whatnot. But I mean, you see ridiculous articles like our New York Post, like this, we'll have virtual babies within 50 years. AI expert predicts. It's just retarded. But I'm saying they'll try. You know what I mean? And if you're not aware of like what's happening around you, you'll find yourself all of a sudden like in a trap. You know what I mean? And just like unable to escape it essentially. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's a very I don't know, very, very worrying aspect. I'm worrying about my kids. Where are they going to be by the time they're old enough to try to find you know, a husband or a wife and a job and, you know, these regular things, and what kind of world it will be at that point, you know?
I think for those specific concerns, what I would say is that, you know, kids need to be kids, right? You and I both know when we grew up, we weren't stuck in front of the TV all the time. We went outside and played. We explored. We had fun with friends. You know, this is stuff that the younger generations, and I really do feel bad for them, like, you know, the younger millennials, the Zoomers,
yeah,
and the Gen Alpha people, they're so stuck into the digital world that they treat their online life more real than their real life. And it's not allowing them to grow and develop and things of this nature. So, you know, they're, and by the way, growing up with less exposure to technology is not a bad thing.
No.
Because this is, like I said, with the nutrition, right? You know, eating a more natural ancestral diet is going to make you a healthier person in the long run. A similar thing could be said with technology, right? Where if we grow and develop, you know, without it and then utilize it, not only will we have an appreciation, a greater appreciation for that technology, but not only this, but we're not reliant upon it. We don't need it. So if the powers that be say, for example, right, the electric vehicles in California, they were having a big kind of, pardon my language, a shit show over there because with the brownouts and the, you know, turning off the power supply, they're not allowed to drive anywhere anymore, right? And, you know, it's a form of control. Technology, especially that those technologies that are connected to other powers, that is a form of their control over you, right? So, and as far as finding a job and things of this nature, you know, our folk really needs to support each other, right? We need to form these tribes and rely on one another and support one another, especially if they're going through a hard time and things of this nature, because, you know, we got to stick together. If we don't stick together, if we remain divided, we will be, like the old saying goes, divide and conquer. They're trying to divide us so that they can conquer us. But if we're not divided, if we're tribal, if we're united, then they're going to have a difficult, if not impossible, time to control us and conquer us.
Yeah, that's why it is partially a numbers game, right? We got to be able to reach our people. We got to, you know, it starts with information at the end of the day. It's action at the end of that. But initially, if you can't even communicate the ideas, if you can't even get information out in terms of what's happening, it's going to get even harder, right? Essentially, and furthermore, the more lost, you know, younger generations are in the tech and stuff, right? Even worse that will be. They'll be, like, imagine the trappings of just artificial generative intelligence or generative AI, right? Like you can just prompt. How far away do you think we're from that? Like just prompting, oh, let's do a you know, Star Trek meets Lord of the Rings set in the 1950s or whatever, and you can watch a whole movie. Just, you know, it's slop ultimately, obviously, right? But I'm saying, I remember watching the movie Her. I'm not sure if you've seen that. It was actually kind of interesting that in terms of like the guy who he kind of got engaged or like romantically involved almost with this operating system. That's like this raspy female voice or whatever.
MGTOW dreams come true.
Exactly, right? Am I right? I mean, how long until the I mean, we'll begin as a digital girlfriend. They're already rolling that out. Agile, yeah. I think it was, in out of France or Italy, we're doing that now. But I mean, they're literally grafting you know, human skin now on like robot hands and stuff, you know, and mm-hmm. faces and stuff to begin that process. And it just, if it continues, it's just a matter of time. And imagine then how that even further, what that would lower the drive to go out and achieve something and accomplish something. And just the natural drive of like, you want to make a mark on the world. You want to impress, you want to get the girl, right? That you're desiring. And you try to do your best. You want to do better. You want to be, you know, you compete essentially. Many of those things is removed in a society where there is, you know, both abundance to a certain extent, but also like anything you want, right? Automation, you could just 3D print whatever the hell you need. All incentive will be, again, your sexual drive potentially will be lost in that as well because of, you know, they are going to do these sex robots and stuff. And so that it's just treacherous. And so it will take like an iron discipline to be able to, you know, resist those things because it will be easy. And for the most part, unfortunately, humans are the path of least resistance, right? That's kind of how we're hardwired biologically, right? You came across something in nature, sugar, honey, whatever, something like that, right? Oh, fast carbohydrates. Take as much of this as you can now because you never know when you'll get it again, right? In fact, your survival hinges on that. Now it's just this slop abundance, essentially. And that's part of the reason why people are, you know, overweight and obese and all this stuff. It's easy, right? It's an easy path out.
Yeah, and what I've been saying for years, and you know, and even in the video that you're playing, this is a time for heroes and heroines, right? Great and small. And there is no hero without a great adversary, and we got a ton.
Yes, okay? We do.
And here's the thing is that these legends of our gods, of our heroes, of our folk, right? They overcame, right? You strive to overcome these dark forces. So I'm not necessarily concerned about the dark forces again, because, you know, I'm an optimist. So, and not only this, but I know that the gods are, you know, they're guiding us back home for a reason. There's a reason why you're seeing this technological tyranny. And alongside of it, you are seeing a rise of ancestral faith, the very ancient, along with it. And it's not because they're united. It's because it's an opposition to it. And if we can overcome these dark forces and not subject ourselves to it, then we are going to be all the better for it. You know, I am thoroughly convinced that the people who are able to overcome these dark times, your great-grandchildren are going to write sagas about you. They're going to write epics about you. They're going to sing your name, because, and they will look up to you because you stood up when it was difficult. You stood up when the technological terrors of our time were overbearing on everyone, right? It's not just a couple individuals here, or it's not just one nation. This is global, right? So, you know, if we can overcome these, if we can, you know, have that faith, have that drive to push forward to where we are supposed to be ancestrally and with the guidance of gods, there's nothing that can stop us. And, you know, we will be remembered very proudly for that. However, if there's people who submit themselves to it, you know, and things of this nature, they're going to be forgotten. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm an optimist too. I think these are some of the greatest challenges ever. But I'm kind of happy that we're that I'm alive at a time when those challenges are so great. You know what I mean? Like that's an honor, really. It's the best time ever. What is it? The quote out of Fight Club, like, oh, there's no great war. There's no battle for us. And it's like, yes, there is more now than ever. You know. anyway, so. Obviously the land issue is important, right? Like we need our land back. that's part of this too, right? It's not just about returning to the land, but we need our territories back. This is also, you can have a group migrating to a new area, and if they're great stock, they'll achieve great things there, obviously, right? But if you have too much displacement of land or whatever, and obviously, you know, too many hostiles around you, that becomes increasingly difficult as well. But it's not just about, like, you know, carving out it can start like that, obviously, carving out small pieces of land here and there, and our people almost resettling, or, you know, whether this is, there's a lot of projects right now ongoing on this front, which is great. I'm supportive of all of them. I hope they're all successful. Let's see which model plays out, or which works, or which doesn't, and things like this, right? But you begin small. But at some point, like, what made us partially also what we are is the land, right? It's just, it's not just the blood, it is the soil. And so yes, these are two vital components that we have to, you know, return and get back. So that brings us to the bigger question there of, like, okay, so we need to restore our nations. We need to restore our land, our spiritual traditions, I think is part and tied into that as well, right? And, you know, if we are talk about Christianity a little bit, and obviously this is something that you can approach from, like, it's easy to look at the structure of it. You can look at the gayification and the LGBTQification of the many churches out there. You can look at how the Pope is kissing the feet of migrants and things like this, right? It's been very universalist, and whether that was the intention from the beginning or not, that is debatable. But at the same time, and it's easy, the other piece I want to show on that too is the Israeli piece. Did I have that here? Netanyahu praising, let me see if I can find that real quick here. He was praising Christians, right? Zionism is a big problem in all of this, as we've said. Oh, dang it, where is it? I'll find it. Anyway, he was talking about, here it is. There's no greater partnership than Israel and believing Christians. Prime Minister Netanyahu tells Trump's faith advisor, this is, what's her name again? Paula White, right? She seems like a genuine lunatic, this gal, by the way. So Christianity has brought the structure of Christianity has you know pushed out paganism, and you know again from my perspective, I'm not attracted to it. So for me, it's not a problem. It was never you know kind of a battle I had to have. But this has intensified online for obvious reasons. There's more people you know fighting over this issue now, whether you know it's Christianity or paganism, which path is the best forward and things like this. And I think it's undeniable to say that the church have certainly been used for universalist aspirations, and it's for anybody, kind of anyone can convert to it, as opposed to a native European faith, which is tied to the ethnos, again, makes it easy for me. Okay, that's ideal. So what do you feel about like Christians that are pro-white? They are, you know, 80% on a page or whatnot. I mean, I'm sure they want to convert me, and I kind of want to I want to convert them. I want them to come home to their, you know, kind of ancestral faiths. But I've also understood how hard that is when you're dealing with faith, right? You're dealing with, it's not just now history and reason and trying to figure, you know, like the best path forward. This is intricate to their identity. And partially, and it's not that I'm afraid to engage in it, but partially I also see it that like if they're 80% on a page, that 20% is then, if you attack that in the wrong way, now you've kind of turned them into an enemy as opposed to someone who is mostly on your side on the pro-white issues and things like this. Do you think it's constructive? Is there a way to have this discussion between Christian and pagans without the constant just like you know ad hominems and attack and anger and all these things? And that's fine. I mean, it is what it is at the end of the day. People are set in their ways. But I'm genuinely interested, as you said before, like we're already kind of small. We're already kind of marginalized. I want to try to reach as many people as possible. And so it's that tug and pull, right? I can see the negative downsides with the attachment to Zionism within evangelical Christianity. And then you can see the attachment to, you know, whether it's like, well, we're the real Jews. And I think that takes away from what we just talked about. Like, why do you need that? We're native Europeans. That's your faith. That's where you belong, you know, kind of thing. So it's kind of a, yeah, it's a hard issue to address. And I'm not sure how to approach it in the right way. And what works for some is not going to work for others. Again, as I said, if people are pro-white and they stand up for their folk, faith is secondary to me. However, faith, I realize, is also intricately tied to your folk, right, and to how to move forward. So how do you view these questions, and what do you think is a good tactic to try to reach people and build bridges as opposed to burn them, I guess?
Well, first of all, I want to say, you know, we know the precepts, right? Truth fears no investigation. That's just a fact of life, right? Where, you know, if somebody has serious questions, they deserve serious answers and not just brush it away. There's a lot of talk about, you know, shut it down. And, you know, from the Christian side, as far as these debates go, because they see it's not turning out in their favor. If it was turning out in their favor, they would be cheering it on. They'd be like, oh, come on, let's go. You know, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, in these debates, we could talk about the history, we could talk about the present day, and, you know, the Islamification of Europe, exactly how that's playing out right now is exactly how Christianity came in. It was a foreign faith from the Middle East that came in, destroyed civilization, and, you know, and things of this nature. And, you know, Christians today are very upset about it. But, you know, this is exactly how those of us who follow ancestral faith view the previous iteration, you know, Christianity, and what they did. So, you know, here's kind of the thing, is that let's look at the numbers today, right? We have to be realistic. Let's look at the numbers. Christianity is in free fall right now. This is a fact. There was an article, I think you posted it. Do you remember that video of the German priest rapping?
Yeah, I do.
And there was a article that came out around that time that video showed up, which was in 1 year, 2024, in one nation, Germany, 1 million Germans stopped going to church permanently.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, And there's a reason why. When you look at, for example, the churches, like 6 out of the 10 major resettlement organizations are Christians. And Christians themselves are not calling out their own, right? They're not calling this out.
Yeah, I think that would be a bigger problem, right? What was the saying from the Bible? Deal with the beam in your eye before you deal with the speck in someone else's, or what was it?
Yeah, there was a parable associated with it. I can't remember off the top of my head, but the moral is, yeah, you have to, you know, take the log out of your own eye before you take out the speck of another.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look within and fix your own problems. And my thing is a lot of these, you know, we was Jews, you know, Christians online, they're not going to church. This is abundantly the facts when you look at church attendance, and they get kicked out of churches on a regular basis. And my thing is this: if you can't take back your own churches, you have zero probability of, you know, taking back a county, let alone a state, let alone a province, let alone a nation, let alone a continent or a hemisphere or the world. So the fact of the matter is that they have a lot of work to do themselves, you know, as far as taking back their own churches. You know, we will see if they are successful in doing so. I don't think that they will. And, but when you look at the trends, what are you seeing? You're seeing, Christianity, as far as European peoples, you're seeing Christianity in the decline. In fact, there was an article that was written not too long ago that America is going to lose over 1 million Christians by deporting all the illegals, you know, and that's indicative that this isn't a European movement, right? The Christianity isn't a European movement. The vast majority of Christians are in the third world, whether it be Africa, Latin America, or so on, you know, and it's a majority non-European faith right now. And so the fact of the matter is that, you know, you're seeing, as far as trends go, a rise in non-belief, atheism, agnosticism, what have you. But you're also seeing a rise in pagan belief. In fact, over the last 20 years, from 2000 to 2020, we have multiplied by 10 times. 10 times our population in 20 years. We're well over 1 million as far as 2020. And as of right now, if you were to run the numbers, in just the United States, by the way, this isn't the world. Just the United States, Europeans in the United States, well over 1 million in 2020. If you run the numbers, we're probably around 2 or 3 million today. We are a player on the board. In fact, there are more of us today than there are Lutherans. So we are a player on the board. And not only this, but you're seeing at the exact same time, you know, you're seeing HOFs, legal recognition. For example, Lithuania, the last pagan nation to become Christianized in Europe, just recently, you know, this year, accepted ancestral faith as being a legitimate religion. That's a big step, a big step.
Didn't Greece do something similar? They built a temple, right, in Greece, I think, or something?
Yeah, there was a temple near Arcadia dedicated to Zeus and Pan, by a, archaeologist, and a, very devout member of, the Hellenist faith. And he was arrested at the behest of the Orthodox bishop. The Orthodox bishop and the local prosecutor were working hand in hand to arrest this man for daring to go back to ancestral faith. And so, but ultimately it was coronated. The celebration went uninterrupted and it went off without a hitch. My thoughts and prayers go out to, you know, those folks over there, because they're facing real, you know, oppression, and not just from the globalists and the Muslims, but also from supposedly their own side. And you have people, there was a live stream a while back. I don't know if you have the clip. If not, you can look on my Twitter. where there was a debate between Jeff Daugherty and Andrew Wilson, who is a Orthodox. And Jeff Daugherty, who's a heathen, he said, "We've tried to work with Christians, and they won't let us. And they'll shoot us in the back." And Andrew Wilson immediately pipes up and says, "Yes, we will happily, like, we will shoot you in the back in a second."
Andrew Wilson is not pro-white, is he?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
But he's on the quote-unquote right, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that clip. It's interesting, isn't it? Now, when you said the, let me see, I was trying to find something, the rise of paganism. How much of that do you think is like Wiccan and kind of, you know, some of these other... Are they deemed that? Because it brings us to that other interesting issue, right? Where, like, you now have, it's always the factionalization, right? I mean, and that's just a fact, right? Like, no matter what we say or anyone else say, no one's going to stop. That's just what it is. But there's that propensity. And again, you see it within Christianity itself, right? You have Lutheranism, you have Catholicism, you have Orthodox, and you have different, you know, the 30th war, 30 years war in Europe and things like this, right? Detrimental things, like awful things.
I love when Christians make the claim that Christianity unified Europe. No, it didn't.
It did not.
In fact, they would kill each other by the tens of thousands over the translation of a single word, filioque. That's not a joke. That's real. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is that right now what we're seeking to do is, you know, unity. But in such a way that we don't lose who we are, right? Because that's another thing, because you see ideas in the pagan sphere about this, right? Because Wiccanism is in form and function, both syncretic and perennialist, in the sense that they say, well, all the male gods are the divine masculine. All of the female goddesses are the divine feminine, right? And you see this with, you know, the syncretist movements that are moving around in the pagan sphere today. They're kind of slowing down now because of these debates.
Yeah.
But what they're trying to do is they're trying to say these faiths are ethnic, and what we need is a racial religion. So therefore, we need to create a new religion. But when you, quote unquote, create a new religion, it doesn't have that authenticity of the historical reality of what our peoples were.
It lacks the legitimacy of history, right? Or like the fact that it is ancient and it was something that we had, it's right there. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, literally, right? it's right there. And I felt that too. Like, you don't have to come up, you know, adding things or like, to, you know, I don't think it's something wrong with like expanding things or where there are question marks or something like that, right? Where there's a fuzzy piece, we don't know what that is. That's fine, but we don't have to like exactly, because what was it, the Church of the World Creator, right? There's been some of these attempts in the past, right? Of like trying to, let's just invent a religion where like the kind of the race and ancestors is at the focal point of, you know, essentially what we worship or like what we adhere to or what we try to aspire to. And it's like, well, we already have it, right?
Yes. And by the way, having ethnically distinct faiths in Europe is, you know, it's part of the actual diversity that trying to preserve, right? Because a Celt is not a Slav.
No.
A Norwegian is not a Sicilian and things of this nature. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't work together.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. And what I kind of see in the future, if things move along smoothly, is a confederation of these different ethnic faiths working together, not trying to fuse together to where we lose our ethnic identity, we lose our ethnic faith, and we lose our ethnic lands. But, you know, working together to push out and keep a safeguard away from these universalist forces. So, you know, I think that that's definitely going to work. I think that the decentralization is a feature, not a bug. We are tribal by our very nature, going all the way back to the Ice Age and even in our bloods today. You know, there is this tribal, local part of who we are and what we're about, and we should strive towards that. Again, because being true to ourselves is the first step in moving forward. You know, it's kind of like, you know, what is it? The 12-step alcohol program or something. The first step is to identify that you have a problem, right? And that's where a lot of our folk are stuck at right now. They don't even know that they have a problem. But once when you identify the problem, then you can identify the solution and then move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. So the couple of things you hear, right? And again, it's the Wiccan thing. Well, paganism is gay, you know, like things like this. But I don't think I know of a single actually organized pagan or heathen, whatever you want to call it, institution per se. You can find like some gay pagan on like a Facebook group or something like that, you know, but you can't really find like an institutionalized thing. Yeah, exactly.
They're all online and they're in little groups, you know, at coffee shops and whatever, but they're not building hofs. They're not building temples.
No.
They are essentially, for all intents and purposes, what is the accurate depiction of LARPing. And by the way, these are people who don't have a real serious spiritual connection, so they do fall away, and they mostly, not all of them, okay, because to be clear, Wiccanism was invented in the 1950s.
Yeah.
By a pervert, no less, who wanted to see women topless. But besides that point.
Nice right, try.
No, it's real. Gardner, I think his name was. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that there are many organizations that are sprouting up. In fact, you know, there's several all over the country. There's several in the Northwest. There's several in the Southwest, in the South, in the Northeast. One that's really killing it right now, and they just, and I'm going to shout them out, okay? Focus Summer Hallowing by Ermin Folk, right? They have, I kid you not, there's pictures, and I have it on the video, right? In fact, it's about to show up on the little video clip right now. They have, you know, 3-foot, 4-foot statues clad in gold of Odin and Thor. These are people who are real serious. They're folkish. They're legit. They build temples. They worship the gods. They perform sacrifices. They take this faith seriously. To those who don't take the faith seriously and claim it, they're not legitimate in my eyes. It's kind of like when you ask a Christian, well, what about all the churches with the gay flags and the transsexual flags and the BLM and all of this other stuff? These Christians online will say, well, they're not real Christians. Well, you know, we are saying the exact same thing about the
they're
fake pagans.
Real pagans.
There yeah. are plenty.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you'll have some of that. But the difference here is, as we said, that the the majority, there's a couple of exceptions, right? I'm not sure if SSPX is slightly better, I've heard, or something. But, you know, again, for the most part, the organized Christianity that we see has been so liberalized and watered down, you know, to such an extent that it's like, okay, well, you get to work on fixing that, you know, first before attacking other Europeans or like trying to, you know, break out of the situation that we find ourselves in, essentially, right? So I don't think it's some kumbaya fest where we're all going to get along at the end, and I don't expect that either. But but if there are common goals, yeah, there's common objectives we can have for that period, and then if there's a split or disagreement after that point, so be it, you know, kind of thing, right?
Well, here's the thing: European Christian is a European, okay?
Of course.
Now, if they become our enemy, that's one thing. But, you know, we can, you know, nothing precludes, there's nothing in the sources saying don't work with Christians. Okay. Just to be clear, there's no historical source that I'm aware of. If there is, I'll say, okay, you got me. I'm, you know, wrong. Now there is orthodoxy as far as like those who profess ancestral faith should practice it properly. Okay. This is real. At the same time, you know, there's nothing saying you have to hate your folk who don't believe exactly as you do. Whereas on the Christian side, that is the case. They do have religious texts that do say, kill the pagan, don't suffer a witch to live, destroy the idols, things of this nature. And so there is that dichotomy. So if, you know, we are prepared you know, as a, and I, again, I can't speak for every single heathen or pagan in general, but, you know, the point of fact is that we are prepared to move on our own, you know, and move forward into the future. And if they want to, you know, work with us, that's cool. But if they want to stab us in the back and these other things, then we're not going to work with them. And they can call that divisive, but they are the ones being divisive. So, you know, I just need to make that clear.
Yeah, no, I totally get it, right? Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, I assume you're, yeah, we could talk about Alexandria. There's other things like that, that early Christianity, which was a Jewish rebellious movement in the early days. That's undeniable. Yeah, they had.
I know that you saw the Algies video. Did you remember that?
Yeah.
That portion?
Yeah, I do. Very interesting, right? I mean, if we look at that, you go through the history and all that stuff, and you know, at the same time, then I think, you know, I do find the book interesting. The I forget the author's name, but the Germanification of Early Medieval Christianity. It's interesting. There's certainly enough overlap, and they were certainly intertwined. It wasn't, by the time Christianity was established in Europe, certainly it wasn't the Jewish rabbinical rebellious movement that it was, you know, in Judea, in, you know, whatever, you know, during the Roman Empire occupation, obviously, right? But again, that goes to that point of, like, you know, Christian argument of being like, well, Christianity is what made, you know, Europe great, and, you know, things like that. And it's like, no, it was in spite of Christianity. I think the greatness is within the folk soul, right? It's within our people. That it shows you the persistence and the ability to overcome and to continue despite the fact that there are enemies coming in, there's foreign faiths coming in, that we managed to preserve a lot of these things and keep them in place. And it shows us, no matter what, I mean, maybe there's exceptions, but, like, no matter what thing we would adopt or what faith we would adopt or whatever, we would, and it could be much better probably, and who knows, but these are speculations about where we would have been if we didn't Christianize in Europe, who knows. But at the same time, if we go on a weird path in the future or some other thing, right, the greatness is within us. It's racial. Yes. It's the blood that makes it what it is, and through us will be greatness, no matter what veil we have over us or whatever spiritual system that has been, you know, pushed on us, essentially, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. God's made us to be like them, and they rise. So should we, right? And that's not the belief that, you know, our goal is to become gods. You know, that's a whole different topic, but, you know, which is ridiculousness.
But it's aspiring to be, not maybe to be like them, but to have that you're not an equal to them, but they're alongside you. You look up to them because you want to aspire to become better, a better warrior, a better philosopher, a better, you know, father, like these types of things, right?
You know, what I say is that you have many ancestors behind you, and you got many great family, friends, and folk beside you, and you got many great gods and goddesses that guide you. You can't be black-pilled when you know for a fact that that's the case. Right. And guess where the gods are going? They're not going backwards. They're not walking backwards. They're walking forwards with our friends, family, and folk. They're walking forward with our ancestors behind us all the way. And so should we. We're not going to be stagnant. We're going to be run over, right? You know, in a stampede. We are moving with them into the future, forward, into revival, into this new mythic age. I mean, goodness gracious, they're bringing back dire wolves.
You know, I saw that.
That's fine. I'm convinced, even though it may not occur in my lifetime, I know that in the future there will be a new mythic age. And you know, when you, in Germanic faith at least, you come back through your ancestral line. So, you know, the work that we're doing today, you know, and you can view like a Christian building, but you can also say a grand temple, right? Those weren't built, you know, in 5 years.
No.
The people who laid down the foundation stones knew that they would never sit in the pews. They knew that they would never see the finished product, but they did it anyway. And they did it because they knew that their children would. And when you know that you are going to come back through your ancestral line, you will experience all of the fruits of all of the hard work you know, that, that you are doing today. So it does drive you to action, to do better, to ascend, you know, and to plant the tree, right? The ancient Greek proverb, to plant the tree so that your grandchildren can sit in the shade.
Yes.
That's what we're about.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, right? Because they're called Gothic cathedrals, right? And they're called Gothic cathedrals for a reason. And exactly. Even, I mean, again, you look down. Let me show you. I mean, we could show some exterior things, and they're amazing buildings and sacred geometry and all these things in there, right? But I mean, if you look down the nave of a church right there, I mean, that's a sacred grove. That's trees,
yeah, that's
and
the canopy
and
of
the canopy.
Look at that.
Absolutely, that's what it is. These are inspired by Germanic people that still had, again, the tie to nature came through these buildings because it was so deeply entrenched in them, despite the fact that they were Christianized by that time. Well, the majority anyway, right?
and to the degree of which they were Christianized is debatable. You know, I like to point out the fact that dueling is not promoted in the Bible at all, yet dueling culture existed up until relatively recently. In fact, we've had U.S. presidents who dueled people, right, for honor and these other things. You know, so the fact that, you know, to the degree of which Christianization actually happened in the past is debatable. It is a point of contest. But I'm not going to rewrite history and say, actually, everyone in the medieval times was secretly a pagan. No, that you know, that's just not accurate either. You know, so there's the degree of difference. In fact, the best example that I can give for this is the Catholic Saint Brigid, who was a legit, well-known, highly loved, and widely worshipped Celtic goddess of the same name. But, you know, the church said, actually, no, she's a Christian saint. And I explained this in my Algies video, and you can look up the history yourself. It's quite hilarious when you look at it. So even, you know, Christianity, you know, as it was in the medieval time, was very much influenced by paganism. In fact, there were maypoles outside of the vast majority of churches in the north, you know, and that's a pagan symbol. You know, and so, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, as far as, you know, how Christianized they were, we don't know. But the reason why they build these beautiful things in the manner of which they do is partially connected to who you are as a person, right? Because you don't see African Christians building Gothic cathedrals. You don't see churches, say, like in the Middle East before Islam, in the style of Gothic cathedrals. These are intrinsic to who we are. They resonate with our blood, right? And what I don't want to promote, because I don't want to get this idea across, is that what I don't want is Gothic Christian cathedrals, but with pagan dressing. Just remove right. the statue of Jesus right. and put a statue of Odin.
Right.
You know, we should build our own temples, but they should resonate with who we are. Right. And yeah. utilize those symbols and, you know, and that architectural design was inspired and should be, you know, emulated more or less, you know, to a certain degree, you know, not again, not having Christian churches, but with Odin or Thor or Freyr in there instead of, Yeshua. But utilizing what connects with our blood to build greatness again.
Yeah, indeed. A couple of things there that you brought up, which I find it's interesting. I think the other counter argument I've heard too is like, well, pagans converted to Christianity, so therefore you lost. You know, kind of like I've heard that many times. But the reality is, that would be like, because it was a top down thing, right? It wasn't a bottom up thing. I mean, you've had there's many examples, too numerous to cite here. But I know the history in Sweden particularly well on this, right? There's Malung in Dalarna, for example, where even runic scripture survived. It's kind of like it's an area which basically is harder to get into, right? Because of the nature how it is right there, and so it survived well into the. Basically the modern era, right? They speak differently still to this day. Many people there, they have their old traditions. There was one guy in the Western Gothic parts of Sweden that was traveling around with one of the earliest, you know, when they could do remote recordings, right? The Swedish radio stations, Swedish state radio. Just after the Second World War, like, you know, getting into the late 40s, 47, 48, something like that. Just recording like some old timers and farmers and stuff like that. And they were talking about like customs that they had that clearly were pagan to this day, right? The many of these things survived for a very, very long time. So the equivalent would be like saying, well, since most of the leaders now, right, again, thinking of the top-down model, are basically devout Zionists, that means we're all Zionists now. It would be basically like, it's like saying the same thing, which is just not true, right? People keep their faiths, and then even they even if it's imposed on them, but it's not enforced like by violence, it kind of reverts back, or they pick up certain traditions, or it kind of the old stuff weaves back into the new things, right? Saint Lucia or Lucia in Sweden is a classic tradition. It's an Italian Catholic saint, the name of it, but it's clearly like a at least a few thousand years old, you know, celebration of light in Sweden, right? So there's many of those types of examples where that's just simply not true, right? So it just because it's a top-down decision-making doesn't mean that the rest of the population have adopted it.
And by the way, there have been attempts, because you notice if you look at Christian European history, you notice that there's always periods where, you know, pre-Christian ideas keep butting up to the surface, and you know they have to keep constantly tamping it down. The greatest example, of course, is the Renaissance, right?
Yeah,
where you know the Italians and
the Medici.
Venice and Florence and stuff like that. They looked to the Romans, they looked to the Greeks instead of the church, and there was some contention about that, but. You have major artworks about the Greek legends, about the Roman legends, and the Germanic faiths. For example, you know, in the 20th century, and then even in going back into the 19th century, you had the German faith movement, and that was very influential. And you keep seeing these things over and over and over again. And even during early Christianization, you saw people like Jarl Haakon. Right in Norway, if memory serves me right, and he said, "No, screw this, you know, Christian stuff. We're going to go back to sacrificing to the old gods." And even the Christians at the time said that his land and his people thrived. Right, imagine right writing that down and not asking yourself, "Hey, wait a minute." Did we make a mistake here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you start to see this. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that what I like to say is like an analogy. You're in the Western United States. So you know full well that there's fire season, right? And forest fires, they happen. They're natural. Some are caused by men, to be fair. But they are a natural phenomenon. And they are very tragic. Right. You see these old growth forests that were there. I don't know if you've been to Yellowstone, but Yellowstone, there were tons of burnt down trees because there was a great fire that happened a while back. I remember going there when I was a youngster and, you know, I saw these burnt trees and stuff like that. But you know what else I saw? I saw new trees sprouting up.
Nice.
And that's one of the things that we need to. You know, come to terms with, because one of the things that people who come home to ancestral faith, they ask the genuine question, and it is a genuine question. How do we reconcile the Christianization of Europe? What was that? Why did that happen? Similar thing could be said about a forest fire, right? Why did it happen? It's tragic. This old growth forest burnt to the ground. All the animals, you know, died and so on. But give it enough time and a new forest, a new generation will grow and they will become the new old growth forest. So, and you look at these cycles and they happen cyclically, right? Just like after nighttime is daytime, you know, when it's nighttime, we're not afraid. We're not scared that it's going to be darkness forever. We know that the sun's going to come back up. And a similar thing could be said on a much greater time scale. Of ancestral faiths coming back, so I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, we're still searching, and as you said, it's I think a lot of people are struggling with their faith, you know what I mean, and where do we belong and all that kind of stuff, and again, I want people to come home, and it's there for people, and it's something that's being built up, you know what I mean, it's not fully as established as it can be, but as you said, it takes time, and let's see where it goes, and let's see what happens, and let's see how many people find it you know, kind of attractive, but I think it's undeniable something in the European spirit that these ancient symbols, these ancient gods, they just appeal to a lot of our folk, whether they know it or not. I know even Christians, they like the aesthetics of it, and they like there's a sense of strength there, and almost power, if you will. You know what I mean?
How many Christian influencers have as their profile pictures pagan men statues as their profile pictures?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely there. So yeah, no, it's about strength. It's about survival strategy. What do we need, right? Kind of thing. I've come to realize that too. Like, some people need, you know, something to worship. They need something to bow down to. They want that in their life or whatever. I've always been more, I'm a truth seeker. You know, I want to know what's real. You know, what's authentic. What really happened? You know, these kinds of things. And I have a less of a need to bow down and worship something, but I have a need to feel that something is with me, obviously, if that makes sense, right? It's what you brought up before, that there is a, interestingly, there is a strength. And again, that's LARPing, right? But like, if you believe that you have a God on your side, chances are, if you go into battle, your outcome is going to be more favorable if you believe that you have it, and that your God is stronger than, you know, your enemy's God or something like that, right? That there is something there, and it's, you get, you know, again, some people, the atheists, would say, well, that's just kind of placebo or whatever. Well, but whatever works, right? I think it's real. I think our ancestors are with us. You know what I mean? They're in us. We are part of them, right? We have genetic memory. There's all these other things we can point to. But knowing that someone is on your side and someone is looking out for you, they're watching us, they're observing us, they want the best for us, that's a very powerful thing. And in this day and age of science, you know, science, whatever you want to call it, I think that's increasingly more important, because what that has does, what has happened is we've just stripped away, right? Like, just, you know, divide and slice and open and carve up and see what's inside of that, what's inside of that, in our search for, like, well, what is it, right? What makes up this reality? And, you know, these kinds of questions. And as science then have ascended, a lot of that kind of magic, a lot of that, spirituality have been removed as a consequence of it, but I think it's clear a lot of people have an empty feeling with that as well. You know, I mean, they're not content with it. But just know that there's a real aspect to this where they are in us and they are part of us. You know what I mean? And that's very powerful. Absolutely. I think we should play on that. You know,
absolutely. You know, and this is one of the things during the hardest times of our folks' existence. You know, we looked to higher powers to guide us. Right. And in the ancient times, when there was no civilization, when there were predators out there that were hunting us, right, you know, and things of this nature, we didn't just curl up in the fetal position and give up. That we, with the blessings of our gods, with our ancestors behind us, we overcame those troubles and we established civilizations that still inspire us today.
Yeah.
And it's that creative force, that creative energy that we need now more than ever, because right now there are so many of our folk that have just given up hope. And it's sad to see. But here's the thing, is that it's that light, that creative force, that drive to overcome the troubles of our time and to better yourself and to better your family, to live in accordance with nature and live naturally, ancestrally, that is not just going to benefit us in the here and now, but it's going to have a magnification effect throughout the generations. So it's really, you know, once when you start getting this right, the further along it goes, the better it'll be. So this right here, the revival that's happening right here, right now, is not the end all be all. We're just getting started.
Yep, that's right. That's right. All right, let me take you a couple of these super chats here. We're going to wrap up in a little bit here, but yeah, it's been a good show. No more news. Adam, good to see you, man. Says, great guest, most important topic, hail the old gods, down with Yahweh. Adam says, good to see you, Adam. Hope you're doing well. Albert, thank you so much for that generous donation. Albert, good to see you as well. Hi, Henrik, hope all is well. I'm still at work. I'll watch later along with the new Western Warrior. Take care. Thank you so much, Albert. Always good to see you. Thank you so much for your support. Schwer Gustav as well says Christianity has been discredited. It's has been discrediting itself for the past 50 years or so without any help from us. I say this as someone who was a youth leader and actually got people into Jesus. After I left for college, they burned it down. They burned it down in a year because of the Protestants wanted to attack Mormons and Catholics. Yeah, that's part of that more infighting that we talked about earlier. For some reason, I'm not sure if it. I think everyone does that. I don't think it's a white thing necessarily, but isn't it part?
Maybe Sunnis kill Shia, right? Yeah, and there's different Sunni sects that kill Sunni sects. There are different
Hindu and
Asian religion sects
in India. Yeah, right? They're fighting, and yeah.
Yeah. So this is just a fact of life, and you know here's the thing is that. You know, what is the basis for not working together, right? And if it's, for example, you know, you don't believe exactly as I do, you know, then that should be called into question, right? If it says my book says to kill you, right? Then you know you gotta ask yourself, okay, why, you know. Is this the problem? And so on. So like, you know, as far as like, infighting and stuff like that, I think that if we keep it in the realm of debate and discussion that, you know, we'll be fine. And we've been having this on the pagan side for at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it hasn't dissolved into, you know, violence. I'm going to freaking kill you and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, that's just silliness. However, on the other side, that's not the case.
Yep. I want us to survive. And as you said in the beginning, I want us to thrive as well. Right. And so that's the question here. What do we need as a folk, as our race to be at the pinnacle and do our very best. Right. So these are questions that we'll continue to ask, but I think this is a great introduction. I want to thank you for your time. It's great having you here. Great talking to you. Why don't you give us some plugs? Tell us where people can find you. And obviously the videos that you made, you have, I think three, up there right now. And you're working on more. You have some other additions to on your Telegram. Is that correct?
So, right now I have, Telegram and X. That's where you can follow the social media as far as the, debates and stuff like that that I've been involved in. By the way, thank you very much, Adam. I know that, he was in a space, that same space that you were in. And, he had a show afterward and he said, you know, some Nietzschean pagans, you know, and I'm sure he was referencing, myself and it, cheered him up and, you know, That brought a little smile to my face. You know, it was pretty good. Nice. But you know, shout out to Adam Green. He's a great man.
Yep.
But you know, yeah, and I wanted to personally thank you for, you know, bringing me on and having this conversation, and hopefully we can have more. But as far as our videos, we're doing videos on YouTube. I do post some of the shorter videos on the Telegram and on X, so you can watch the Algies video there. I have a promotional right now. You know, I'm doing a deep dive into Yggdrasil, and you'd be surprised for something that, you know, when you look up videos on Yggdrasil, they're like 5 to 15 minutes long. There's a lot more information that these guys aren't talking about. So
yeah,
this is probably going to be somewhere on the ballpark of like 30 minutes. And we just got done with the research, you finishing editing the script, and you know, got the promotional video out. We're working on the video, so it's going to be pretty good when it comes out. But I don't have a crystal ball, so I'm not going to give myself a deadline like I did the Coming Home to Ancestral Faith documentary. But That one is in the works, so stay tuned. You know,
it always working.
We'll be posting that soon.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm working with video. I know things always take longer than you expected to, and then you find more as you actually as you piece it together. Oh, this here, and then you add in. You got to edit or update. You know, you can go on and on. No, but these are great introductional videos. So guys, check it out if you're interested in these types of topics. Assyric Media, as I said, X. He's on YouTube as well. And Telegram. Is it same on Telegram, just Assyric Media, or what's the handle there?
Same thing. T.me/Assyric Media.
Very, very good. All right. Awesome. Thank you for coming on. It was great talking to you. And I'll definitely invite you again in the future, and we'll continue this conversation. Maybe we can bring a Christian on. Let's have a debate. How about that? We'll see if someone
wants. That would bring some eyeballs.
Yes, it would. Yes, definitely. We should. All right, man. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Keep up the good work. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there we go. Returning to Native European Spirituality. A little segment on that for you guys if you're interested in that. I certainly am. We are going to be back here tomorrow, obviously, with Flashback Friday for more. And yes, we did just put up a Western Warrior as well. Check out that if you're interested in that. I did kind of a deep dive on the Israeli thing. I couldn't help to show some of the screenshots here today from that segment, but just showing you how Israel is positioning itself as an AI tech superpower. It's, it's frightening when you get into the details. So do check that out. If you are curious more on that, redhousemembers.com, you can get a membership over there. Helps us out as well. Great way to support us. We can continue doing this. You can also get a membership on subscribestart.com/redice or redicetv.locals.com. As of right now, Odyssey is de-striped. It's demonetized, so you can't get a membership there, but it will be active. If you guys are active members there, it will be active, I would assume, at least for the duration of the month that you had. So we'll see if they have an alternative or not coming up there. All right, before we wrap up here too, I do want to say thank you to our executive producers. We got T. Lothrop, Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap, Jake, Red Pill Rundown. We have French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeebs, President Obunga, Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf. We have The Ride Never Ends, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, Rex Ballington, Call Me Combo Deal, The Dearborn Toxic Event, Brendan Anthony, Penelope 7, USA. We got Bertrand Compere, Dixie Drone Force, Arctic Wolf, shout out to Albert. We also have Europe Awake and Teutonic Werebear. Thank you so much to our executive producers. Then we also have Mr. Walker 696, Yuan Son, Leroy Dumond, Snark Pop, Eyes Open, Mr. Lemry, Yuri New, Obadiah Hexwell, Perfect Brute, Single Action Army, Lord H.P. Lovecraft, Trevor, Der Schwabe, Sonata for Violin, Whitewater Rafting Fan, Jetfire, ExposedFlyers.com, Shane B., Restitutor Orbis, Alcyon, and The Boo Man. Thank you to our producers. We appreciate you. You can upgrade to one of those if you'd like to get some more resources our way, redicemembers.com or subscribestar.com/redice. All right, there we go. I think that was a good show. Thank you to Assyric Media again for joining us. So we'll be back here, guys, in just a few hours from now, basically. But yeah, Flashback Friday tomorrow, as usual. Tune in for that, of course. We will see you then. Folk first. Take care.
New Red Ice merch available now. Folk First t-shirts for adults and for toddlers. Fatigues for men. Our favorite, the Red Ice Camper mug or ceramic with black print. High quality leather keychain with solar boat imprint. Our Red Ice hat, one of our best sellers. Pick one up today. Or why not? Gray Auslander Rouse t-shirts for both women and men. We also have fridge magnets, Folk First, One Disease, and our black men's t-shirt with the classic red solar boat. Folk First. Get your Red Ice merch from LanasLlama.com. Get an item today. Lana's Llama, proud sponsor of Red Ice.
Thank you for watching. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for exclusive members content. Don't miss our latest shows, interviews, and other videos only for subscribers. You can also become a member by signing up at subscribestar.com/redice. Get full access and help support our work. See you on the other side.